Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McKeonis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Russ Kick. He joins us by telephone from Tucson. Welcome, Russ.
Hi, Vic. Thanks for having me on.
Russ, this is quite a weighty project you've been working on, the graphic canon. I've read the first two volumes. Is the second volume out yet?
Yeah, almost. It's an October 2nd release date.
Okay, so it'll be out when this interview airs.
Yes.
All righty. Well, I'm just wondering, how did this happen? I mean, this is an amazing project.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Well, the idea came to me in a bookstore in the graphic novel section because... Well, you know, I had some adaptations of classic literature, some graphic adaptations, you know, of some of Shakespeare's plays, and there were other things that had been coming out, and you know, I happened to see The Trial by Kafka. Someone had adapted that as a full-length graphic novel, and something just kind of clicked at that point. I said, you know, someone needs to do a huge anthology of this. You know, and I was kind of thinking of the Norton anthologies of literature, you know, those giant brick-like books that, you know, that you have for English 101 and 102. And, you know, it's 1,000 pages. It covers, you know, all kinds of literature from all different eras. And so I just thought, yeah, there needs to be an anthology like that, but with the literature being adapted into comics, into full-page illustrations, you know, various ways of visually adapting it. So that's when the idea came to me right then, and I found Seven Stories Press, who was willing to do, you know, a huge book. At first, it was going to be 400 oversized pages. And I was collecting so much great work, though. You know, there was a lot of stuff that had already been published that we were wanting to reprint. And then I was commissioning a lot of new art. It turns out that 75% of the art is commissioned just for the book. And there was so much happening that I told the publisher, you know, I can easily expand this. Can we make this 500 pages or more? And he said, well, you know, if you have enough for two volumes, let's do two volumes. And so I said, sure. And then somehow within 2 weeks, he had made it three volumes.
Huh.
I don't even really remember how that happened, but suddenly, yeah, three volumes of 500 pages each. And you know, we go in chronological order, starting with you know, Gilgamesh at the beginning of volume one, and then ending with, you know, the end of the 20th century at the end of volume three.
I'm guessing that there was a lot of networking going on, because I'm supposing that a lot of these artists and illustrators know one another.
Yeah. Yeah, that was happening. I got a lot of great recommendations from artists who I had approached, you know, and they were like, "Oh, you know, I've got this colleague who's really great." And so yeah, a lot of it happened that way. That's, for example, that's how the Tibetan Book of the Dead in Volume 1 happened, was a recommendation from another artist. And, you know, that's just an outstanding adaptation. I mean, everyone's just floored by that one. So yeah, that was definitely going on.
Well, this is an amazing collection, because there's just such a fantastic variety of work here. And, of course, we're covering these classic texts. So a lot of this stuff is the kind of stuff that you would learn about in school, but you've got this incredible art, which adds this whole extra dimension to it. And I was a guy who grew up reading the underground comics. I love Zap and the fabulous Furry Freak Brothers, and I was weaned on this stuff. So when I saw that you had Robert Crumb involved in this, and just a brilliant crummy, just an incredible version of Boswell's Journals. And then I saw you'd actually gotten S. Clay Wilson involved, even though he doesn't do artwork. He was always my favorite. He's got some stuff in volume two. This is just incredible.
Yeah. He has illustrations for fairy tales, of all things. You know, the Brothers Grimm and Hans Christian Andersen, which, you know, it's kind of funny because he was always the most extreme of the underground artists, you know, that first generation that came along and started it all, like in 1968. You know, and even Robert Crumb admitted, you know, he learned how to break taboos from S. Clay Wilson. And it's kind of funny when you think about it, but then again, you know, fairy tales are actually, you know, they're pretty gruesome and nightmarish kind of things very often. So it does kind of fit that S. Clay Wilson would illustrate them.
Well, as you point out in your notes, for the Grimm fairy tales, they've been cleaned up. I mean, they were gruesome to begin with.
Yes, definitely. They've been Disneyfied, but even before that, yeah, the Brothers Grimm themselves realized, you know, after they published their first two volumes that, you know, they had a huge audience with children, which they hadn't actually counted on. They were doing this from a folklore standpoint. And so, yeah, with all the subsequent editions, they kept cleaning it up and making them safer and nicer.
Since we're talking about art and graphic illustrations on the radio, I would like to be able to try to visualize some of these for our listeners to give them some sense of the variance in the artistic depictions here. And I have some favorites, and if we could just chat briefly about some of these. Gilgamesh, which opens the book, as you say, actually there's a connection with our area. We have some gentlemen associated with Wittenberg University who were involved in this one.
Yes. Kevin Dixon is the artist, and his dad, Kent Dixon, who's a professor, did the translation and rendition of Gilgamesh. It's an original. And he tried to really keep the humor that's actually in it, and the earthiness that's definitely in it. And yeah, Kevin brought this great kind of, I mean, when you think, when most people think of comics, you know, this is probably the style they're thinking of, actually. This is, it's a great kind of cartoony, almost going back to the, in some senses, to the underground comics. The, you know, the first generation, you can kind of see it fitting in with that. And so, yeah, he did a fantastic job with the Bull of Heaven episode, where Gilgamesh rejects the advances of the goddess Ishtar.
And you are going to be in our area for some events coming up, including one at Wittenberg. You're going to be there on October 18th for the Classic Comics, the Graphic Canon Colloquium, with the Dixons involved in that, and that'll be at the Ness Auditorium at 4 o'clock on October 18th. And you're also going to be in Cincinnati a couple days later. You're coming in for Books by the Banks on the 20th.
Yep, I'll be in the Author Pavilion pretty much all day.
Sounds like fun. I see where you were already out at the Brooklyn Book Festival a couple weeks ago. How'd that go?
Oh, that went really well. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
a big event.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, and yeah, like with the launches of volumes 1 and 2, we've been really lucky because we've been able to project the art onto huge screens, and yeah, it really looks amazing. The volume 1 launch, the screen was like, it must have been close to 2 stories tall in this auditorium. Yeah, so it was just, it was amazing to see all this art larger than life like that.
Some of my other favorites from Volume 1 artistically were Coyote and Pebbles by Micah Ferrator. Love that artwork.
Oh, yeah, very lush, atmospheric artwork, yeah.
Gareth Hines with Homer's The Odyssey and the Cyclops episode, that was fabulous.
Yeah, yeah, that's from his full-length adaptation. He painted the whole thing. I mean, it's every panel is a watercolor painting, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you have some stuff from the Bible. I love the artwork that Benjamin Frisch did on the Book of Daniel. That is very strange.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was really very stylized, you know, angular artwork. And the colors are great, you know, just lots of oranges and reds.
And I see where you had a gentleman who appeared on this program a number of years ago involved in your Rumi translation, Coleman Barks.
Oh, yes, yes. He did the translations, and then Michael Green did, did the artwork, and it's that, yeah, that piece is unlike anything else in the book. It's kind of collages to a large degree, really experimental stuff, and mm-hmm. it totally works.
Russ Kick joined us today on the program, and he has edited these incredible volumes, Volume 1 of the Graphic Canon, Volume 2 of the Graphic Canon, which is just coming out, and Volume 3 will be coming out when?
In March.
In March. And then there's my favorite in Volume 1, which I already alluded to, James Boswell's London Journal by Robert Crumb. I mean, this is just, if you're into Robert Crumb, I mean, wow. Well, we won't even talk about that one.
Okay.
In Volume 2, we've already mentioned that S. Clay Wilson did the Grimm fairy tales, and also he does some from Hans Christian Andersen. Now, I was not aware that he had had this this health issue. I did not know this.
Yeah, yeah. He, outside of his home, he was found one night just unconscious right outside his house with a bruised up face, and he has no memory of what happened. And, you know, it's not clear if he was attacked or if he just, or if he fell, but he's had major health problems. Hmm. And he managed to keep drawing for a few years after that. This was, you know, several years ago, mm-hmm. but now he's not able to anymore.
I assume he lives in the Bay Area somewhere?
I believe so, yes.
Uh-huh. Another one of my favorites in Volume 2 was Heinrich Hoffmann's Struwwelpeter, illustrated by Sonja Glisitsch.
Yes, yes, that's... Oh, the name may not ring a bell with a lot of people, but, you know, they might have heard of it or seen it because it was published in the mid-1800s in Germany, of course, and the idea was to scare little kids into acting well, you know. They would, the classic one is if you suck your thumb, this horrible monster-like man is going to come along and cut off your thumbs.
Nice.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole book of scaring kids to death like that. And so, yeah, Sonja Glisitsch, who is just this amazing illustrator and silkscreener, did these five-color silk screen illustrations for each one of the gruesome tales.
They're really gorgeous. And as we get into Volume 2, there are many authors and stories that are going to be familiar to our listeners. We have this incredible Edgar Allan Poe montage by Gris Grimley. I love Moby Dick by Matt Kish.
Mm-hmm.
Herman Melville's classic story. What beautiful work.
Yeah, definitely. He took it upon himself to make an illustration for every single page of Moby Dick.
And wow.
Yeah. And he's a self-taught artist, and he used all kinds of styles and media, and just, yeah, created this amazing work.
And I think if I had to pick favorites from Volume 2, they would be some of the Lewis Carroll work. I love Jabberwocky and the Alice Gallery. That was just a knockout.
Oh, great. Yeah, that is also one of my favorites, because as I was approaching artists to be, you know, looking for artists who might want to be in the book, who had ties to classic literature already, I noticed how many had already done illustrations for the Alice books. And, you know, you can't imagine a wider variety of approaches and styles and ways of visualizing the characters. So, yeah, I decided to pull together about a dozen of those artists into one gallery.
And during that same period, my high school years, when I was savoring those underground comics, the Zaps and et cetera, I was also a big fan of the poetry of Arthur Rimbaud. So I was delighted to see this rendition of The Drunken Boat.
Mm-hmm.
Very well done.
Yeah. It's such a visual poem. There's so many amazing images in it, and that's exactly what the adaptation captures, is just one image after another.
And then, of course, there's Oscar Wilde's picture of Dorian Gray, which mm-hmm. really lends itself, I think, to graphic illustration.
Yeah, and John Coulthart did that one, and he decided to go with a series of 10 collages. He actually put together collages from imagery of the time period, and you know, and each one is, you know, this full page stunning work of art, and you know, he worked in all these interesting little hidden aspects to it. And my favorite one is that you know, the text that you see accompanying you know, that's worked into each collage, there's text from the picture of Dorian Gray, and it turns out that's actually from a scan of the first edition of the book from 1891.
Hmm. Russ Kick joins us. He's the editor of The Graphic Canon. Volumes 1 and 2 have been released. Volume 3 will be out next March. I assume that is complete. What are some of the works that will be in Volume 3?
Okay, yeah, Volume 3 is going to be completely the 20th century. And it's going to start with Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad. And there's going to be, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz is in there.
Mm-hmm. Tarzan?
No.
No Tarzan?
No Tarzan. Didn't make it, no. There was so much, though, so much.
How do you choose?
Well, a lot of it's up to the artists. You know, I mm-hmm. would send them a wish list, actually, I was like, you know, if you want to be in the project but you're not sure what you want to do, you know, I think these are some works of literature that would be great, you know, to be graphically adapted.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them chose from that. And yeah, a bunch of them actually had, like, dream projects. They had favorite works of literature that they've always wanted to adapt, but never had a reason to, you know, never had an outlet for it. And so, that happens sometimes. But, Volume 3 will be filled with just all kinds of classic 20th century stuff. You know, the Great Gatsby's in there, The Grapes of Wrath, Gravity's Rainbow, all the way up to Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace.
That's fitting. Well, I'm really curious. I sometimes am asked by people, well, gee, how did you get into interviewing authors? How did you get into the book thing that you're into? And I never really know what to say to them. And so I'm going to ask you, how did you get into what you do? I understand the New York Times has called you an information archaeologist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I've always loved writing and reading. And so right out of college, I started writing book reviews for small independent magazines. And it eventually led to a book deal from an independent publisher. And ever since then, it's just been kind of it just keeps going, just a string of books and anthologies.
I didn't realize until I booked this interview and did a little studying that I had heard about you before and just didn't remember. I guess I'd heard about your work because I had heard about the memory hole.
Yes.
Can you tell our listeners about that? Because I'm sure some of them have heard about it too.
Okay, yeah, that was a website that I ran for several years where I would get government documents, and mainly through Freedom of Information Act requests. And then I would post what the different government agencies sent me. And occasionally there would be other kinds of things, like there were a lot of agencies that were busy pulling down parts of their websites, taking information offline.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes I was able to recover at least some of it.
Now, how would you do that? With software?
Well,
you reconstruct it somehow?
A lot of the time it was, if I found out right away that it was gone, there would still be at least some of it left in Google's cache.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And, yeah, then there was also the Internet Archive, which is, you know, this website that attempts to basically make a copy of the entire web.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they would still have some of it. And sometimes I would file a Freedom of Information Act request saying, hey, please send me on CD the stuff that you took offline.
And you would get it?
Yes.
So what was your motivation?
Government transparency.
Uh-huh. And what happened to the memory hole?
Oh, well, it's offline now. That was just, I guess the short explanation is I basically just burned out.
Uh-huh.
Because I was, at the same time, I was writing books and editing anthologies along political lines, current events, looking at media manipulation, all kinds of things like that. And I was running the memory hole where I was digging up these government documents about what's really going on. And it just, after pretty much like it was about 10 or so years of dealing with that material overall, I just realized I was just like in this constant state of like low level anger,
uh-huh.
always upset, always kind of down.
Hmm.
And
sorry, I brought it up.
No, that's all right. I realized I had to switch gears totally because I just couldn't do this for another 10 years. I mean, I would be a basket case. So,
and as you watch what's going on with WikiLeaks, you must be saying, well, There But For the Grace.
Yes, actually.
Yeah. So tell me about the Disinformation Company.
Oh, yeah. They started out as strictly a website back in the pretty early days of the web. The idea was to be an alternative information news site. And pretty early on also, one of the co-founders was able to do a television show along those lines that got aired in Britain on Channel 4.
Mm.
And so that was like the early days of Disinfo, those two things.
Mm, okay.
Then I came along and started writing for the website, and I asked the guys who were running it, you know, do you have any interest in branching out into book publishing? And they said, actually, yeah, that was part of their plan. So I told them some of my ideas, and then that's how my Books for Them started.
I see. Russ Kick has joined us. He's the editor of The Graphic Canon. Volumes 1 and 2 have been released. Volume 3 will be out in March. He also, as you have heard, does a lot of other stuff. He's a information archaeologist, according to the New York Times, and he's going to be in our area. You can meet him on October 18th. He will be at Wittenberg University for Classic Comics, The Graphic Canon Colloquium, and there will be an event at 4 o'clock in the Ness Auditorium on the campus of Wittenberg in Springfield. He'll also be at Books by the Banks in Cincinnati on October 20th, autographing copies of The Graphic Canon, I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really pleased that you could be with us today on the program.
Well, thanks for having me on, Vic. I enjoyed it.
Can a guy make a living doing what you do?
Yes, actually. It's pretty rare, and I realize how lucky I am. But, it is possible to make a living writing books and editing anthologies.
And I see, according to your bio, that you're in Tucson right now. That's where we called you. But you also have a base in Nashville. What do you do in Nashville?
Oh, same thing. I'm writing and editing. But I grew up in Tennessee. So I kind of have a circle of friends there and friends and family in Tucson, so I split my time.
Gotcha. Well, we really appreciate your time today.
Well, thanks. I enjoyed it.
You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. Our guest has been Russ Kick. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. If you go to our website at wyso.org, you can listen to podcasts of about 100 Book Nook interviews. And while you're there, why don't you pledge your financial support to WYSO? Your support makes this program possible. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.